Welcome to Canucks Central at Noon. Vancouver Canucks live here.
Drops off for Horvat, back to Hitler, then to Horvat at the slot. He scores! Oh, Horvat in overtime!
On the home of hockey, Sportsnet 650.
Landeskog turned it over to Horvat, right to the slot. Pettersson scores! Is there anything this kid can't do?
Here's Scott Rintoul and Mick Nizar.
It is Mick Nizar and Jamie Dodd filling in for Scott Rintoul, who will be back on Monday as he takes some well-earned holiday time off for the All-Star break.
Sure, a good week for it, too. It's getting some sun.
Yeah,
sure. It's pretty rainy here. Pretty gray.
He's in a sunny area.
An undisclosed sunny location.
Undisclosed. He's posted on Instagram, isn't he?
I don't know, probably. He's held up today's newspaper.
Yeah. So we got to tease this as we were heading out. An interesting question we wanted to pose to you. Because it is All-Star weekend, and the Canucks, in recent memory, have had some interesting All-Star candidates. Will Brock Besser be an all-star as a Canuck ever again? And I think that's the simplest way we can put it. And then we can provide more context to this as we go along. But I just wanted to pose this to you, 650, 650. Will Brock Besser ever be an all-star as a Canuck again?
My knee-jerk reaction is no.
My knee-jerk reaction was, yeah, of course, he's got the caliber to do it. But when you start to think about it, I think it's a fair question.
So, a lot depends on what the NHL does with its All-Star format, because we know they like to tinker with it, and I don't think anyone necessarily believes this one is, you know, etched in stone for a long time to come, especially because they could still do division realignment, they could change their playoff format, a lot of different things could happen. So, that makes a big difference. Mm-hmm. In this current playoff format, it's tough for him, because it's hard to send multiple people to the All-Star game. I know the Canucks are doing it this year, but it's hard, and if we expect Elias Pettersson and Quinn Hughes to be consistently having all-star level seasons, that makes it really, really tough for a third skater like Brock Besser to get in.
Yeah, with the 3-on-3 format, if you had 20 deep rosters, then that's a bit more interesting, right? And you can get a lot more representation per team. But it does feel like he's going to have something special one year to get in. Like Max Pacioretty right now, having a great season. And he barely got in. Can Brock Besser surpass that to change perceptions? And the perception's going to be, well, if he's having a good season, that must mean Elias Pettersson's having a good season or Quinn Hughes is having a good season.
Yeah, it's like it's similar to, you know, a wide receiver trying to win MVP in the NFL. It's like, well, but who's throwing him the ball? And if Besser is lighting the lamp a lot, that probably means Pettersson and Quinn Hughes are racking up assists for him. Now, I do think there's a scenario if it's coming up on the All-Star break and he's on pace for 45 goals, something like that, and I see Besser having a season like that in him. If he's on pace for something like that, yeah, he's got a really good shot of making the All-Star game. But it does seem like Elias Pettersson has established himself league-wide as kind of the iconic Canucks player. You know, he's kind of first on the list when people around the league talk about who's the best player on the Canucks. And that matters in an all-star format, right? Because people go for the name they know. They rely on, oh, I know Elias Pettersson's great, so we're going to send him to the all-star game. So Elias Pettersson's kind of number one. And then I think with the season he's having, Quinn Hughes has slid into that number two slot in the public consciousness. If you were to poll national hockey writers on the East Coast, you know, who are the most important pieces for the Canucks going forward, they're going to name Pettersson and Quinn Hughes. And that's not taking anything away from Besser, but again, we're just talking about the all-star format and how it's decided and reputation and stature around the league matter. So he's got to do something so spectacular that it kind of breaks through the pre-held judgments that other people have about the Canucks roster. He's got to get by those as an obstacle if he's going to make another All-Star team.
And again, this is about the format, really, than it is the talent of the player. Because I think what he's done is fantastic this season. He's become a better overall player, which
totally
is what's
agree.
Really interesting. But at the same time, you're right. It's he because of the way it's set up, he may never become an All-Star again as a Canucks player again, which is really interesting. And a couple of texts coming in here. You know, why is trading Besser even a thing? Been hearing a lot recently. No one's advocating for trading Brock Besser. It was a text that came in as we went to break. We were asking for some of your takes. And so some people suggested, you know, is there an option to do this for Jason Zucker, who's also a tremendous player in his own right from Minnesota? Jason Zucker's name did come up, and you know, it does bear looking into the idea of, okay, if they wanted to do a move of that ilk, what would it facilitate? And the name that Minnesota has been reported to always ask about is Brock Besser. That's why it's been mentioned in the past. And in Elliot Friedman's latest 31 Thoughts, it's Jason Zucker is a name that's been out there, and teams will continue to be checking back in right now, but the Wild are in a spot where they haven't conceded anything on the season. Despite them kind of falling behind, they're not ready to pack it in and start making moves of that ilk to, you know, usher out a Jason Zucker who's got a lot of years left on his deal, 3 years left at $5.5 million. He's basically a different version of a JT Miller type trade, just so you can get an idea of the cost of acquisition. I would be surprised if they go down that road, just to give you an idea of what the conversation has been framed around.
The value difference between Besser and Zucker is significant to me. Like, Besser's a much more valuable player, and that's not to take anything away from Zucker. That's just the reality of their age. Zucker's 6 years older. He's likely either at or approaching the downslope of his career, which Brock Besser isn't. Now, that doesn't mean you can't build a trade around those two pieces. It's just Minnesota has to be providing significant value in addition to Zucker. The texter who started this conversation said, hey, they take Erickson. Well, that's pretty interesting because getting off of Erickson's contract is a really big deal. Now, I don't see Minnesota being interested in that, but okay, if you have to take a little bit of hit, you know, you don't like Zucker as much as Besser, but you lose Louis Erickson's contract, and now that frees you up to do a whole bunch of other things. Yeah, then you're talking. If you want to get really kind of fanciful and let's start building a bigger deal, do you get, you know, Zucker, do you ask them to include Matthew Dumba? And then you provide more assets going the other way. Now you're talking about a blockbuster,
suddenly look
a lot of moving pieces. I get it.
At an arms race kind of deal here.
Sure.
It was posed to Patrick Johnson yesterday, just briefly at the end of our talk yesterday, which is really fascinating about the Canucks front office, and we'll get to that in a second too. You know, what options do the Canucks have heading into the deadline?
The cap's going up a bit, but it's not going up tons. You know, you start have to looking at guys like Troy Stetcher, you know, that's such a good soldier for this team, has done so many good things for them. But if you make your decision to keep Chris Tanev, I mean, I think in the end, if you're going for the playoffs, you have to pick Tanev because he is clearly still the better defender than Stetcher, although may not have as long a runway left in his career as Stetcher does. I think you do need to start looking at a couple of those faces. I mean, I think there's actually a case to be made. I know people are going to go crazy, but if there's a case to be made to move for Tanev, given how well he's playing, it's the best we've ever seen him play. You know, can you find a player in that spot? I mean, is he really the long-term solution at right wing with Elias Pettersson? You know, I don't know if you're going to find a first-line right winger at the trade deadline, but, you know, maybe there are guys out there like that. Maybe there is someone that can help you shore up that spot. Or, you know, Brock Besser. I mean, I think Brock Besser's having an incredible season, and at the same time, I think he's also a face that you could ponder, say, look at another team and say, would you be interested in a sniper on a value contract, depending what you get back. I mean, I think at the end of the day, you're better off standing put because the odds are of you actually getting that great improvement aren't there necessarily. I think you'd like to add. I understand why Jim Benning would want to add, but it is going to be challenging given where they're at their cap as well.
And that's why I kind of lend it to looking at that they do stay pat around the deadline unless there's money moving out, money moving in, right?
Yeah.
Is there a cap crunch? Yes, there is. Is it as exaggerated as people want to make you believe? I don't think it is. you just have to make tough decisions. And I'm not saying to the level of Brock Besser. It's just you can alleviate the cap issue. You just have to want to walk down a certain path.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think the Canucks were aware of that when they made these decisions in the summer. Now, I think you can go back and criticize, obviously, the Louis Erickson deal, some of the other contracts they've mm-hmm. handed in past summers, maybe before they were fully cognizant of what the cap crunch would look like this summer. But you look at, you know, Tyler Myers, and then the one that's really interesting is signing Michael Ferland later mm-hmm. in the summer. They knew by doing that that they were going to have to make some tough decisions. So that, to me, suggests they have players in mind they're willing to make tough decisions on. Again, don't necessarily think it's Brock Besser, but it could be Troy Stetcher, could be Jake Virtanen, it could be, you know, someone like Tanner Pearson even, who's having a great year, but who is still on the books for another season after this one.
And that interview with Patrick Johnson was yesterday on the program with Andrew Walker and Satyar Shah. They were talking about, you know, a developing story that, you know, doesn't have a conclusion right now, but will have a resolution at some point. And just to get you up into speed, it's the contractual status of Director of Amateur Scouting, Judd Brackett. And PJ kind of detailed, you know, just where this is right now, because there's a deadline that will be approaching. And just as interest in Judd Brackett increases around the league, you know, will that mean wandering eyes? And will that mean the Canucks miss an opportunity to give him a promotion and finalize a contract extension? And just, you know, the reality of the situation is his contract is coming to a close.
You pay attention to how people talked and what they said. And as I said at the time, I thought it was notable that Judd Brackett's name did not come up in our discussion with Jim Benning about scouting. And, you know, nothing I've heard in the last 2 weeks has changed that. Judd Brackett's contract, like many of his other scouts, is up this summer. That's very much, I mean, that's always going to be a question mark. This is a guy that mm-hmm. is well-regarded, has had a strong positive influence on the Canucks' scouting department the last couple, I think 2017 for sure, 2018, 2019 are all very heavily influenced by him as the Canucks' director of amateur scouting. And, you know, so as a result, you have, a body of work like that, you're inevitably going to draw the attention of other teams. Of course, you know, he does have to be out of contract to actually be signed by someone else. He's no different than a player. But that's certainly a deadline that's hanging above all mm-hmm. of this. And I think it's not a surprise that, he might be sitting back and wondering, okay, what else might be out there?
That is Patrick Johnson talking about the front office situation that, again, is developing. I think people want a resolution about things right now. This is just a developing scenario that it was reported that contract is ending. And so what happens in situations like these? We talk about with players all the time that, you know, is a player willing to commit right now? Because as they improve, are they ready to cash in? And what's cashing in from an executive level? It's an improvement on responsibilities. It's an improvement on titles, improvement on paying, on your wage, all of that. And that's just the reality of the situation that exists for Judd Brackett.
And PJ made a great point. Just like players, Judd Brackett can't talk to other teams while he's under contract.
Yes.
Now, there are networks and there are back channels, and he has an idea of who might be interested. I understand that. But he can't get into the nitty-gritty of money, of role, of term, all that stuff with other teams while he's still under contract. So it's very natural for him to say, hey, maybe there's a team that loves my work mm-hmm. and wants to give me, you know, double my salary and make me director of player personnel. That team could be out there. He just doesn't know yet. So it's very understandable for him to say, hey, why would I sign an extension now? I'm in high demand. We always talk about players when they're hitting UFA at age 28 and they're coming off a great season. That is their opportunity to get paid. That's kind of where Judd Brackett is right now. He's coming off Elias Pettersson and Quinn Hughes, and he's a free agent. Like, this is his time to secure the bag, potentially, right? Now, execs obviously can have a much longer career. It's not the same pressure to get paid right away.
No, but there is pressure to maximize your ability to succeed
and
in your
strike
profession
while the iron is hot, yeah. Man. This could be his peak value, and I'm sure he's aware of that.
GM names, especially, you enter the conversation, and it's hard to get out of the idea that you're going to fall out of GM running, right?
Once you're kind of in that
rumor mill,
it's like eventually you're going to be a GM.
But like,
you have to get into it first.
You look at someone like Jim Nill, who was in that conversation for so long, and was there a willingness to want to leave or an unwillingness to leave Detroit? Yeah, that played a part in it, but he was always the guy who eventually will get an opportunity, right? The other one I'm thinking of is spent years in LA, Mike Fiuta.
Yeah.
Was like, oh, yeah, he's eventually, and suddenly that name dissipates. And the competition to enter that rumor mill is always going to be there. And once more names get filtered in, well, it dilutes the pool and your name may slide out. And we complain so much about retread head coaches, retread executives. That happens because you got to get into the club,
mm-hmm.
right? There's a circle within the circle. And if you can get into that GM club, suddenly you get that title. You're always going to be expected to or looked at as a general manager.
Mm-hmm. This conversation is so interesting because it's so relatable outside of the hockey context. You know, anyone who's trying to climb the ladder at their career, one of the things you're always trying to do is show upward trajectory. You don't want to be in the same role in the same position for 5-6 years if you're trying to get to that next one. You want to show the powers that be, other employers, your own employer, that, hey, you're pushing. You're coming for that next level. And again, that's what it might come down to for Judd Brackett. Like, I've done this. I've shown I can do this. And to get where I want to go, I have to take on another challenge. Is that challenge available in Vancouver? I think it should be.
And that's why it's so interesting, the idea of like, oh, I want to see what's available to me elsewhere. There's only so many steps I feel that Judd Brackett could take. Is he going to go from where he is now to being a GM? I'd be surprised.
No, probably not.
But probably not. And so you could offer that to him now. And that's what we talk about. It's like you have an edge over a lot of other teams because of the evolution of what he's brought into as far as data, as far as just kind of being on the forefront of a new way of scouting for the Vancouver Canucks. Again, using science to some degree,
yep,
into something that's kind of an art form. The Canucks have improved their scouting depth, not even just in their own staff, which is supposed to be one of the biggest ones in the league, and also just the extraction of prospects from the draft into their talent pool. We're excited about a lot of prospects now, whereas 5 years ago, it was pretty dark. And because of that, he shows his value to the franchise, and it creates an edge, like Ian Clark is in the goaltending coach. That allows you to maybe not spend as much as you want to as far as goaltending because you have someone that's elite at crafting new goalies. So the importance to him, can you confirm that now, or is it something that he just wants to see what's out there?
And that, again, that's a very understandable point of view and a temptation to, hey, like, I want to see how much other people value me. It might have nothing to do with how the Canucks are treating him. He might love working here, but, you know, you're curious. You want to see what's out there. I get it. If I had to bet right now, I'd bet that he sticks around, and here's a couple of reasons. First of all, again, we touched on this in the last hour, but the Canucks should be spending more on their front office and on their scouting staff than the average team, right? They shouldn't be getting priced out of the Judd Brackett race.
Sure.
Because we know they have an ownership committed to spending money. And this is one of the ways in the NHL you can flex your financial muscle. You can't do it on players necessarily because of the salary cap, but you can do it here. So if it comes down to dollars, they should be right there. And the other thing is, you know, we've heard Jim Benning, we've heard Francesco Aquilini, every step of the organization talk about how they want to be viewed as a franchise, how they want to be viewed as an organization. They want to be seen as this first-class, top-notch franchise, right? Part of doing that is recognizing and rewarding your people for the work they've done. They should want to do that in-house. They should not want Judd Brackett to have to go seek that validation elsewhere. And again, ultimately, I do think they will realize it. Part of what we've been seeing with Judd Brackett this year might come down to kind of contract gamesmanship, where they're just trying to make sure they have the most leverage possible in contract negotiations. But ultimately, I think it gets done.
And I think this is the game, right? This is the interesting part of a negotiation of dealing with someone that is kind of in demand, who rightfully might have wandering eyes, to see what his value is. And if you were creating a succession plan of, okay, this person might be exiting in the near future, how do we have enough time? Do we have enough of a runway to look at and say, what are the steps and what are his role? And do we have people that can do that job right now internally? And do we put into process those? Do we empower those people to start doing that job?
And we should also point out what we know about Judd Brackett is, you know, the phrase, the tip of the iceberg, right? Like, there's a tiny little part of the iceberg on the water that you can see, but then there's a massive part under the water that you can't see. We see this tiny little sliver of public information. And from everything we know, Judd Brackett is amazing at his job and is awesome at his job. But there's also a lot we don't know. And it could be the case that the Canucks, there's someone working under Judd Brackett who's contributed a lot to these decisions.
That they value.
And the
highly.
Canucks think, hey, we don't want to lose this guy. We want to get him in Judd Brackett's role, right? That could be the case. We just don't know. Again, everything we do know suggests Judd Brackett is awesome and that the Canucks really like him. But it is important to recognize that we're dealing with a lot of uncertainty here. Our picture is not the whole picture.
You can check out that interview with Patrick Johnson again, sportsnet.ch/650, with the program. That was Andrew Walker and Satya Shah. Really interesting discussion, just, you know, how this looks right now and how this will evolve over the next couple of months and where we're going in that regard for, you know, what could become of the future for the next – a very important stretch here for the Canucks. Because of the cap crunch that, you know, does exist, one of the ways to get around it is having – strong players on entry-level contracts. Like right now, you would look at Elias Pettersson and say you're getting basically a $9 million player, maybe $10 million player, and it's costing you a lot less than that. We know the ELC, he's going to hit a bunch of his bonuses, but it's basically about somewhere between $3 and $4 million, closer to $4 million that it's costing you.
Yeah.
Because of all the bonuses. That's a big value. And so how do you offset that? You have a bunch of players on entry-level deals or cheap deals, like an Adam Gaudette. It's nice to have a player contributing his level at $900,000. It's nice to have a player like Jake Virtanen right now contributing at $1.25 million. Bit of a late bloomer, but if you have a bunch of players stepping in, like Vasily Podkolzin, Nils Höglander, all chiming in at entry-level deals. Yes, they can hit their bonuses, but if they're chiming in on cheap deals, that's how you get the value, and that's how you get out of things like Louis Erickson's contract, Ryan Spooner's buyout, and
the Luongo's cap recapture penalty.
All of those issues get mitigated if you can find value elsewhere on the roster. We'll get to more and your thoughts as well. Plus, we'll talk to Brogan Rafferty's college head coach, Rand Pecknold, will join us in just a bit. Brogan Rafferty was on earlier today on the starting lineup. We'll play some of that back for you as well. All coming up here on the home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
Growing up, getting cut from teams, it sucks when, you know, your buddies are making the team and you're not. And, you know, every year that happens. But I love the game. I knew I just wanted to play for however long I could. And honestly, like college hockey, like Division III hockey wasn't even in my horizons at the time. I was just worried about that next level and just trying to play at a high level and the highest level that I could.
Now more of Canucks Central on the official home of the Vancouver Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
Rafferty Street. No, it's Baker Street, right?
By Jerry Rafferty. There you go.
I caught up. I see you working. Justin Morissette running the show. Vic Nazar, Jamie Dodd on Canucks Central, filling in for Scott Rintoul. Well, Jamie's filling in for Scott. Scott's back on Monday. Coming soon. And the All-Star break will come to a close soon as well. We were kind of pitching this question to you as 650-650. Will Brock Besser be an All-Star as a Canuck ever again? And again, he's got the caliber to do it. Obviously, we've seen what he can do at an All-Star game in years past. It just now there's more players on the roster who may garner all-star votes, who are more attractive to the eyes as far as highlight reel plays. Brock Besser's got great moments, can score some goals. Quinn Hughes does magical things on the ice.
Yep.
Elias Pettersson does those deeks and gets people jumping out of the seats. Brock Besser is in a spot where it's, as a Canuck, may never see the All-Star game again. And I think that's a reality, but again, has the talent level to do it. Joe Holland White Rocks has a point, though. He will make an All-Star appearance. Let's say Pettersson is injured or something. Besser would be very high on the replacement list. Or if he's the last man in, Canucks Twitter Nation will make it happen.
That, to me, is the strongest argument. If it ever comes down to fan voting, he's got a really good chance of getting in because we see how Canucks Twitter mobilizes. Canucks Twitter is strong, man. Strong.
Can't be beat. Can't be beat at times.
I think Vancouver has to be hosting the All-Star game for Besser to make it in again. Because that's the only time when you see, like, four guys from one team all be in it, right? Like, I mean, like, this is
a very big
exception. There should not be three Canucks in the All-Star game.
No, it
took
an injury and the vote to get three. Otherwise, it was just going to be one. Now, the vote, as I said, if any time a Canucks in the vote, they're probably going to win, and if they have a remotely decent case.
Shout out to you.
What?
Shout out to you, like you listening.
Yeah, exactly. The listener.
Unsigned text. Not only will Brock make it back to the All-Star game.
Not make it back.
Oh, not make it back. My bad. Both him and Pettersson are kneeling at their ceiling.
Sonny is in a down mood today.
It might be the rain.
He's hit us with...
See what I did there? Sunny and rain.
Woo!
He's clouded.
He's clouded.
He's hit us with... Let me just run off some of Sonny's takes here today. The current Canucks roster is nearly at their ceiling. It might even be a mirage. Pettersson will bolt from Vancouver the first chance he gets. Adding an eventual NBA team to Vancouver would take away from the Canucks' loyal fan base and would eventually put the Canucks in relocation talks. And then finally, not only will Brock not make it back to the All-Star game, but him and Pettersson are both nearly at their ceiling. Sonny, what's going on, man?
I'm getting the feeling Sonny's not a Canucks fan.
Turn that frown upside down.
It's Pick Nazar and Jamie Dodd here on Sportsnet 650. We are going to talk to Brogan Rafferty's college coach, Rand Pecknold. Just get an idea. Okay, look, this is an exciting emerging prospect in the Canucks organization. His process of how he played in college, what did he see and what did he like about Brogan's game? We'll get into all some of those details from his college exploits, what happened there. And Brogan Rafferty did join the starting lineup earlier today. Kind of a nice conversation. You heard some of it coming in there as well. And just, you know, he's such an interesting player too, just because of, we see the offensive highlights, right? And when a player starts to emerge, a lot of people want to have that instant gratification of, oh, he's got to come up now. He's got to play in the NHL. If he's doing this in the A, he can do it in the NHL, and man, it'd be so great to have another offensive. It's okay. Let's slow down just a little bit because, yeah, he's putting up points at the AHL level. But this is really about, can he become a positive contributor at the NHL level? And who does he have to surpass? And more importantly, is there room for him to surpass people? You can't have an overcrowded roster. And do you look at it and say, okay, is there the right move to make to open up the space for Brogan Rafferty?
There, I mean, there's potential moves. We've heard rumblings about Troy Stetcher and his future with the organization. And on paper, without having seen Brogan Rafferty for an extended time at the NHL level, that seems like a logical move. You move off Stetcher, you bring Rafferty in to fill that spot. You're not thrusting him into a high-profile role on the team. You know, Stetcher plays the fewest minutes typically of any Canucks defenseman, so that might be a way to slowly bring Brogan Rafferty into the NHL fold. They, by all accounts, are going to try and probably will re-sign Chris Tanev, but I mean, that's another right-sided defenseman who is not under contract for next season. So it certainly seems like there are ways you can get Brogan Rafferty into the fold if you're really motivated to do so.
Next year feels far more likely.
For sure.
I'm still skeptical on the idea of some of these AHL players getting an immediate shot. Because, look, there's still a lot of players on this team right now. Like, Josh Levo's coming back. Michael Ferland's, we would expect to come back. Jim Banning's been stating that, you know, he's coming back in a couple of weeks here. And if you wanted to get the Cole Lynns and Bailey and Rafferty an opportunity to play, there's a lot of bodies already on the roster.
The forwards, it's much more difficult to see them getting a shot this season just because they're so deep at forward and on the wings in particular. With the defensemen, you know, one, two injuries, and then it becomes pretty easy to slide Brogan Rafferty or Ole Levy or whoever else in if you want, right? That path is much more conceivable to me. For the forwards, you're right. It's just, man, they've got to play all these other guys before they even get Cole Lind.
I do think, though, that top-scoring defenseman list in the AHL, like, should give us a little bit of pause. Because that top three, there was, like, that infographic making the rounds last week, which, yes, Brogan Rafferty is number one. That's fantastic. But number two and number three were Derek Pouliot and Adam Clendenin.
Sure.
Like, we've seen those guys here.
It's really going to be more about just the offense, too, right? Like, one of the things that makes Quinn Hughes so exciting, not that I'm comparing the two, but Quinn Hughes has been really good defensively.
Absolutely.
And he's able to facilitate those breakouts because not only is he playing with Chris Tanev, who does a great job defensively, but Quinn Hughes meets and exceeds a threshold of baseline defense that you need from an offensive style D-man. And because he's able to do that, well, that's where the trust gets enlisted, and that's how you build rapport with the coaching staff, and that's why you get the accolades and the all-star nom that he is getting here.
And that's why I think the kind of Troy Stetcher for Rafferty swap makes the most sense, because they're not going to take Brogan Rafferty and just put him in a top four role right away. They're not going to give him power play time right away. They're going to try to slowly develop him even at the NHL level. And for better or for worse, I know a lot of fans disagree with how they've used Troy Stetcher this season, but that's kind of where they see Troy Stetcher too, as a guy who is not necessarily ready for big minutes. He's going to play in the third pairing, although I know he's got good time with Alex Edler this year as well. And yeah, Justin makes a good point. It's not as if Brogan Rafferty's numbers, what he's doing at his age in the AHL, sets him up for obvious and immediate long-term success in the NHL. You still have to put him in the right role, and at least to start, that's probably on the third pairing.
There is a component of it, too, of focus on what the player can do, and can you accentuate that? And Brogan Rafferty was on the station earlier today just talking about the offensive side of his game.
A lot of what you see in my game, once our team gets the puck, is I like to jump in the rush and create offense and create confusion for the other team and kind of expose areas and passing lanes and create scoring opportunities. And I think I get a lot of that from playing forward for almost my whole life.
Again, it's part of that offensive side of his game mm-hmm. that we do look at it and say, from a holistic point of view, you always want to focus on what a player can do and can a coach get more out of that and say, I'm going to put you in positions to succeed. But at the same time, you look at what is being built here, there's a lot of versatility among the Canucks players. There's an expectation of, yes, we will set you up to do what you're best at, but we also expect you to sacrifice and give more of what we want, of being hard to play against, being tough on the puck, all those things that Travis Green has echoed time and time again, of getting that buy-in from his players to give us something, we'll give you something.
It's encouraging for me to hear that from Brogan Rafferty, because there's always been a tendency in the NHL to kind of isolate your high-skill dynamic players. It's like, okay, if you're this type of player, you can only play in the top six, or you can only play in our top pairing. But more and more, we're going to see, okay, this is a offensively oriented, dynamic defenseman, and maybe they don't have the skill or the ceiling of Quinn Hughes, but they can still contribute on offense, and we're going to play them on our third line. Teams have traditionally not always been willing to do that. Brogan Rafferty is the kind of player that, yeah, he's not going to be a typical stay-at-home shutdown defenseman. That doesn't mean you have to give him power play time and play him on your top pairing and ask him to be the driver of your offense all the time, but he has skills that can be effective in any role, even if it's on the bottom pairing on your team. That is an encouraging sign for the Canucks for me.
And there's also him talking about focusing on his defensive game.
I don't think you can ever be too good on the defensive side of the puck, and especially with my offensive production, I guess, this year. I think really the only thing that people are looking at is the defensive side of the puck. I'm happy with where my defensive game is right now, and obviously I'm improving that every day and watching video and asking our coaches what I can do better in certain situations.
That is Brogan Rafferty focusing on his defensive side of the game, where he joined Perry Sikowski and James Cebulski earlier today on the starting lineup. You can check it out, sportsnet.ca. I want to get to some of your text, 650-650, Jamie.
Yeah, this one comes in from Kevin in North Van. He says, any argument to be made for trading for Brendan Dillon? I would prefer to wait and sign this offseason if we can muster the cap room, but he would be a big boost on that third pairing if we want to make a playoff push. Again, that's from Kevin in North Van. Thanks for the text. Interesting name, Ian McIntyre, regular contributor here on the station, covers Canucks for sportsnet.ca. Wrote an article today about three potential targets the Canucks could look at the trade deadline. Two of the names, kind of guys we've heard before, Tyler Toffoli and Chris Kreider. But the third name on that list was Brendan Dillon. Of course, we know he's a local product. He's 29. And that's the kind of move. And again, we can talk about what asset are you comfortable giving up? Should they be going at a rental? You know, do they have to, do they only do the deal for Dillon if they know they can re-sign him or they think they can re-sign him? But Brendan Dillon on your third pair, that works really well. Like, that's a situation where you have guys who could plausibly be top four defensemen playing on your third pairing. And just as a fit on the ice, before we get into contract stuff, before we get into what the price they're paying, yeah, Brendan Dillon would look excellent on the Canucks third pairing. Unfortunately, you do, you know, have to eventually worry about the contract stuff, but that should be the goal of this team, right? Is you want guys who could play in the top four playing on your third pairing. You want guys who could play in the top six playing on your third line. That's the next step this Canucks team needs to take. So yeah, Kevin and North Van, I think Brendan Dillon would be a very interesting option for this team down the stretch.
And also a playoff-tested type player, right? Look why they went out and acquired JT Miller. Look why they went out and got Jay Beagle. Players who could fit in and be ready for eventuality of them making the playoffs. Well, it's looking more likely. There's an emphasis on acquiring those type of players to kind of normalize and settle everyone in high stress situations, high panic situations.
Absolutely.
Should they get to the playoffs? Brendan Dillon, we can argue the value of the player. Like, I like him. I don't know if I love him. And if you're getting as a rental, what's the cost? Hopefully,
sure,
fairly cheap. But the value of having him of a player who has been through those battles, I think would be encouraging to go alongside a Troy Stetcher, an Oscar Fantenberg, or whoever.
Brendan Dillon is the quintessential, you love him on your third pairing, you're not crazy about him on your second pairing kind of D-man, right? No one would ever have a problem with him on a third pairing on any team. Could play on any team in the league's third pairing. If he's on your second pairing, you got questions about your ceiling as a team, for sure. Sunny vibes from Sunny in the text message inbox. He says, anyone else kind of worried that all this talk about Hughes and his offensive game could lead to his defensive game sliding? Mike Green flashbacks.
We got a lot of people texting in. Someone needs to give Sunny a hug.
Yeah. Sunny, come on, man.
Come on. It's okay. Just
and, if, and no, just I'm relax. Not worried about that. Quinn Hughes' defensive game has been exceptional for a rookie defenseman.
And also is, yeah, Is there an emphasis on providing more offense from Quinn Hughes that's going to lead to defensive slide back? No, he's the reason why he's getting all these praise and why he's getting comparisons to Rasmus Dahlin and why all these teams screwed up in not drafting him prior to 7th overall when the Canucks did is because his defensive game has been so good. He's not just living off
not,
of the power play.
He's not a one-dimensional player. And the other thing is, man, I'm not saying that what you and I are doing right now, Bick, is irrelevant, but Quinn Hughes is not sitting around listening to Sportsnet 650 and hearing us say what a great offensive defenseman he is and making changes to his game based on that. As much as I would love that to be the case, that we have that much influence here, Quinn Hughes is not doing that. This again comes in from Torgy and Langley. He says, hey, Sonny, don't be a cloud on a sunny day. You're bringing people down. You're giving off some bad vibes here, Sonny. Come on, man. Cheer up. It's all right.
I did want to go back to what you were talking about. We're still waiting to hear from Rand Pecknold, the Quinnipiac head coach of Brogan Rafferty. Maybe we'll have to reschedule. But I did want to go back to what you were talking about with that article with Ian McIntyre of, you know, who the potential targets could be elsewhere if the Canucks were to go down a road where they wanted to invest in the rental market. And where do we look at on the roster? The names that he brings up, Brendan Dillon, Tyler Toffoli, and Chris Kreider, right? Rather household names when we're talking about guys who are available heading into this trade deadline. But when you look at those guys, like, what are the spots that we're looking to replace? It's great in philosophy to say, hey, they need a top six winger. They need a top four D-man. That's the constant calling card for GMs at this time of the year. But what are they replacing?
So there's two obvious spots. One is the third pairing on defense, and you're taking then either, you know, Jordy Benn or Oscar Fattenberg's spot, whoever happens to be in the lineup that night. That's an obvious area of upgrade. Now, I think Jordy Benn has more to give than he's shown the Canucks this year, and he could still get to the level they thought they were getting. So that could end up being a type of deadline acquisition, but if you're just looking at kind of weak spots on the roster, the Jordy Benn Oscar Fattenberg slot is one of them. The most obvious one, and the one that's kind of has the most potential to be an impact addition, is where Louis Erickson is playing right now. The third player to complement Bo Horvat and Tanner Pearson. You know, you and I have had a lot of fun with what Louis Erickson's done in recent weeks here, but we also know it's a short-term solution. That's not a long-term solution. They still need to find another guy to play with those two guys. And there's been so much discussion about, okay, what's the best type of player to go with Bo Horvat?
Well, that's why I kind of want to get into this.
To me, it's like, I want the right winger Tanner Pearson. That's what I want. I want another Tanner Pearson. And the name that jumps out to me, and I know they were teammates in LA, is Tyler Toffoli. Not flashy. He'll give you a baseline of production, strong on the board, strong defensively, all of that stuff. That's the name I like. I think a Pearson, Horvat, Toffoli line is really interesting.
I feel like the prototype that we're learning, though, is maybe it's that defensive style of winger that we look at. Not necessarily a Louis Erickson specific, like a Zach Hyman or a Leo Komarov, but someone who does meet a baseline of defense. And it's a bit pricier. And I think his defensive game is underrated, but he brings a lot of offensive upside. Like, Mike Hoffman's a name I look at. Now, it's tougher because Florida's made a
sure,
real
they're
run.
They're surging here.
They're really surging. And something would have to happen.
There you go.
Prior to them wanting to explore any trade options. But I look at it, and I'm not certain that their status is so strong. Like, they're still struggling defensively. They haven't gotten the best goaltending. Could they slide back out? And by the time the trade deadline arrives late February, are we having a different conversation about them?
Well, and is that maybe an opportunity for a hockey trade type of move? If they have holes on their roster that they want to fill.
That would be an interesting way to look at an accumulation of assets and say, hey, you can get cost control of a couple of players. You can improve your defense. We can give you a forward.
Now,
and then we get a piece back.
The tough part is there, if you're looking at where the Canucks have depth and where they have needs, they're not really the same position, right? The Canucks have depth at the wing, and they'd be getting a winger from Hoffman, and then, you know, presumably the Panthers would want a defenseman back. Not necessarily the greatest area of the Canucks' depth, depending on how you feel about Brogan Rafferty and Olia Levy's chances of contributing at the NHL level right now. It's worth exploring. I'm a big fan of Mike Hoffman as a player. And yeah, that is a step above Tyler Toffoli, obviously, in terms of the talent he brings. And I would love long-term for the Canucks to find a Mike Hoffman-type player to play along with Bo Horvat. The match before this deadline is tough for me to see there between those two teams.
650-650. I'll get a couple of more of your texts. And look, this is actually a great point from Tambier. The best player for Bo is Podkolzin. And look, I absolutely agree with that. It's going to take some time, I think, to get to the full version of, obviously, what Vasily Podkolzin is. But that's why we talk about the immediate need of, okay, what Jake Virtanen is producing right now, and what is he in the future, right? I'm not trying to spin this in a Podkolzin Virtanen thing, but there's a reality that we're talking about a really strong defensive player here.
Yep.
In Podkolzin, who has those instincts now. And what is he in 2 years, 3 years? And it looks like there's a natural fit there in the future between Bo Horvat and Vasily Podkolzin.
And we should also mention Vasily Podkolzin scored in his second straight KHL game today, so things are looking up for him from a production standpoint in Russia. Yeah, what you said about Mike Hoffman, right, is he has that defensive element and certain high-end offensive traits. That's what the Canucks are expecting, the Canucks are hoping for from Podkolzin. Now, the problem is, do you want to wait the remainder of this season and all of next season into the following year until you get Bo the perfect winger? Do you want to be in a holding pattern waiting on Podkolzin? And I mean, do you flip Podkolzin right now for the future version of him?
That's too drastic. Right.
I agree.
And we've talked about, okay, what's a panic trade? There aren't a lot of assets the Canucks have that are panic trades. One of those would be Vasily Podkolzin. The reason you draft him is because you want to take the two-year investment. It can line up with how your team is being built.
And I think the way you go is you look for the stopgap solution. And stopgap doesn't mean it's a bad solution. Like, Tanner Pearson's a stopgap solution, and it's worked out really well.
Yep.
Explore more deals like that. Maybe you strike gold again. You're not going to win every trade that decisively. But if you can even win a trade half as well as that one, you get a guy who can play on that wing. That bridges the gap until Podkolzin's ready to come over.
That's part of that core conversation. How wide do you want to extend your core? If you keep adding more and more, well, you're less likely to explore creative solutions to when you want to be a contending team. And the Canucks could be trending towards that. They are trending towards the All-Star game, though. A bunch of players obviously going there. Jacob Markstrom, Quinn Hughes, Elias Pettersson, all on their way to St. Louis. We go one more day before our All-Star break commences. Jamie and I will be back tomorrow. Scott Rintoul back on Monday. Reach Deep on the way. Dan Riccio setting you up for the weekend, along with Dom Shermati coming up here in moments on the home of the Canucks. You're going to be talking to Dan Rosen of NHL.com coming up here on the home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.